breeding in relation to black people. And now there is the concern, as the majority population will become people of color in the United States very soon, and they're really worried about these white women not having babies and perhaps running around and having abortions and this sort of thing. So, you know, perhaps it's a kind of a breeding that needs to happen in relation to, you know, getting upkeeping, you know, the white population, you know, here in the U.S. and elsewhere.
Well, Pat Buchanan, the well-known conservative, has made that explicit. He's written a number of books talking about the birth dearth, even though he doesn't have any children himself. Neither does Rush Limbaugh, who's been married four times. Yet they're very concerned about what they consider to be the birth dearth. That is to say, the fact that younger women of European descent are not having enough children from their point of view, and that that's why they're against reproductive freedom in general because of that alleged problem.
Yeah, and your point earlier about this suppressed memory and the kind of the warped breeding issues and other things that happened, you know, forced rape, incest, all of that, you know, having still some impact today is a point well taken when we're looking at all of that discussion, that it really is seems so messy.
Child
to
abuse,
so many
for
people.
Example. Yeah. I don't think you can get to the core of child abuse, which is in epidemic proportions in the United States, without looking at some of these historical roots.
We are just out of time. We're going to have to return to this book another time. I think we need a second hour on this. But any final thoughts?
Well, just to reiterate, I think that the issue for the day, not only for we in the United States, but I would say for the international community, is getting a better understanding of why conservatism has taken such deep root in this country, because it's a central stumbling block not only to domestic tranquility but to international peace and security. And I think that that is the charge for all of us. And I would say it's particularly the charge for the younger people coming up who are going to inherit this territory. We won't be able to make progress until we get a better answer to this question.
Right. On that note, Dr. Gerald Horn, thank you so very much for joining us.
Thank you.
That was Political Perspectives. You're tuned to KBOO Portland. Stay tuned at 11 for Project Censored today, examining sexism within the media, especially at Fox News. But right away, we're going to listen to Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. Sorry, it's you're listening to KBOO Portland. We do have one announcement that we'll listen to before Flashpoints comes around. And thank you for your generous support, all you KBOO members. We love you, and we would love it if you listeners would become members by going to kboo.fm and clicking on donate. Okay, 10:02, and Flashpoints is coming up next.
Exploring Asian American and African American relations.
Throughout most of history, Asian Americans and African Americans have not stood up with each other. We need to recognize that those instances when Asians and African Americans and other people of color have risen up together are exceptional moments in U.S. history.
Crossing East Relations, a new one-hour documentary by Dimay Roberts, Tuesday, June 6th at 11 a.m. on KBOO Portland.
Flashpoints, more missile tests from North Korea, more threats and saber rattling from the United States. We'll have a special report. Also, Santa Cruz, California continues to participate in a post-Trump crackdown on the poor and homeless and their community supporters. And Manuel Noriega dies in a Panama prison. We'll play Robert Knight's exclusive interview with General Noriega before the Americans captured him by musically blasting him out of the Vatican embassy. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. We turn our attention right back to Korea. There's a lot going on the peninsula. And we invited KJ Noh back into the studios to see if we could go over some of this stuff. Let's start here, KJ. Let's start. We've got the new president. He took office May 10th. He got an immediate surprise. In fact, the military didn't tell him that not only were the THAADs in place and ready to go, but there was a little extra trick, wasn't there?
Yeah, so let's start out by explaining what THAAD is. THAAD is the Terminal High Altitude Area Defense missile system. It's a anti-ballistic missile defense system. It shoots missiles down in the 40 to 200 kilometer range as they descend in a parabolic arc through the exosphere. It comes with ANPTY X-band radar, which is capable of seeing about 2,000 kilometers out, which makes the Chinese continent transparent.
Totally vulnerable.
Vulnerable. So the Chinese have been deeply opposed to this. Now, the new president, Moon Jae-in, who was elected on a massive landslide in opposition to Park Geun-hye, the previous president.
Facing 12 counts or 18 counts.
18 counts of bribery and malfeasance.
In jail.
Yes, she's currently in jail. One of the things that he signaled very early on was that he was opposed to THAAD. And then later he became a little bit more diplomatic, and he said that he would like to make sure that THAAD was negotiated or that it went through the regular National Assembly procedures, because this involves, large amounts of weaponry and money and land, and therefore it needs approval in the National Assembly. When he made these statements, starting late March and then again in early April, the components of the THAAD were snuck in overnight and placed because there was concern that he would, derail.
He wouldn't want the extra equipment.
Yes, and so they were afraid that he would derail this. And so then Moon Jae-in has said that, he continues to believe that this is something that needs to be negotiated. It needs to be a bilateral negotiation between South Korea and the United States, and that it should be fully ratified by the National Assembly. Now, saying that, there is massive opposition on the part of the Koreans against this THAAD missile system, not to mention the fact that it's impacting Korea's economy to the tune of between $5 billion and $20 billion a year because of a Chinese embargo against Korean goods, because the Chinese are upset with this. In this situation, it turns out suddenly that There were four mobile launches that were delivered the two in late March and two in late April. And then it was considered that it was kind of running, but at a kind of very minimal level. And then all of a sudden, it turns out that there have been four more launchers that have been delivered. That's 32 missiles that have all of a sudden appeared out of nowhere. Nobody has reported this to the current administration. They only just found out about it and were able to confirm it. And now they're doing an investigation. But the current president is deeply, deeply shocked, because I think it indicates that there's a kind of command protocol is being breached.
Which is sometimes leads to a coup. If your generals start acting outside of the president, that means that the democracy is gone.
That's one way of looking at it. So, the investigation is happening right now, but it's really quite shocking. You don't get 32 missiles of the most advanced technology suddenly appear on your doorstep, and nobody can account for it either on the receiving end or on the delivering end.
And say a little bit more about the president, the new president in the context of this is significant because he is thinking about reorienting the policy and figuring out ways to communicate with the North. So the idea that these missiles would show up and create sort of a hostile atmosphere as opposed to a friendly atmosphere is significant.
Yeah, it's, I mean, already the fact that the missiles were placed in Korea was damaging for this new administration because it created facts on the ground that they have, you know, that would be hard to unravel. But now having these missiles that have been placed, and we have to understand currently what's going on the Korean Peninsula as like a slow-motion Cuban missile crisis. And so just to add this to the equation, but with missiles appearing out of nowhere,
right. This
is quite extraordinary. Moon Jae-in, he's the current president, is a centrist progressive who is favorably inclined towards de-escalating tensions with North Korea. He's favorably inclined to having amicable relations with China. He wants to recover as much as possible South Korea's own sovereignty, which means, among other things, being able to say no to the United States and possibly even renegotiating the United States status of forces agreement, by which the United States has complete control over all of South Korea's troops under the condition of DEFCON 3. He wants to renegotiate this. So he's clearly his own man, and he has a very progressive agenda, but this doesn't fit the larger geopolitical design of which Korea is being buttonholed into.
All right, you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Obviously, we're talking about the Korean Peninsula. KJ No is in, our special correspondent on the region is here, and we're talking about various aspects of what's going on. All right, let's take it to the north. There are at least three tests, and they do appear to be making some serious progress.
Yes, absolutely. So North Korea has launched three missile tests in 3 weeks, and these are the ninth missile test this year, for a total of 12 missiles. So it looks like they're moving ahead with their program. The most recent launch was probably some kind of Scud missile variant. Some people think it was what's called a KN-17. And it, according to the North Korean news agency, they say it had a precision guidance system and advanced automated launch sequence. And it traveled 450 kilometers for 120 kilometer height. It landed within 300 miles of the Japanese Oki Island inside their EEZ. And according, again, to the North Koreans, they said it landed within 7 meters of its intended target. So a very, very kind of precision ballistic missile.
And meanwhile, the saber rattling, the amount of weaponry in the region is unprecedented. And people are really concerned that just one false move and goodbye to 1 million people.
Absolutely. So, you know, the escalation is something that has not been seen in a very, very long time. One of the things that has been said is that, you know, there have been a lot of things that have been said that are ominous. Abe has said that he's working with the United States to take specific action to deter North Korea. The G7 has pledged to strengthen measures to curb North Korea's nuclear and ballistic tests. More than that, what we can also notice is that there are three super carrier groups. That's the USS Carl Vinson, the USS Ronald Reagan, and the USS Nimitz. All three of these super carriers have been deployed to the area, and that's unheard of in a non-war situation. We also know from a leaked conversation with the Filipino President Duterte that there are two Ohio-class submarines currently in...
Trump told them that.
In theater. And then, according to George Friedman, who is one of the founders of STRATFOR, He says there are large-scale maneuvers by U.S. warplanes, essentially 100 F-16s conducting daily exercises, F-35s that have been sent in there. And then he claims that there will be security maneuvers and exercises in Guam and Korea tomorrow. And all of these are very ominous signals that could presage active conflict.
And just to give us a bit of a reminder on why the Koreans and the North is never going to just disarm, step back. The history is of too much suffering.
Absolutely.
And of too much lying.
Yes.
And deception for there to be anything, any trust that precedes a sit-down negotiation.
I think that's the fundamental thing that people have to understand. You know, there are neocon thinkers like Michael Ledeen who say that, you know, the United States needs to pick up some two-bit country and throw it against the wall every 10 years or so just to show who's boss. You know, this is Michael Ledeen, one of the neocon architects. But the fact is that North Korea is not going to let itself be picked up and thrown against the wall. And the fundamental reason for that is that North Korea is a country that has survived a genocide. In 1950, from 1950 to 1953, one-third of its population was decimated.
One-third.
It was bombed into the Stone Age. There were not two bricks standing on top of each other. If you look at pictures of Pyongyang, it looks like an atomic bomb has gone off. And this was replicated in all the cities, towns, and villages of North Korea. After they were bombed into rubble, they were doused with napalm. There were about 3 million liters of napalm that were dropped on the country. And then after the napalm, they were flooded. The dams in the country were blown up, and the entire country was flooded. And then there was also chemical warfare and biological warfare. So this is kind of a catastrophe of biblical dimensions. Douglas MacArthur,